My Life Now is a half-hour podcast show which regularly features reviews of new releases and all-time classics of both traditionally published and self-published books.
Tune in for special guest interviews and, of course, helpful tips to not only write your next book, but also to help market it.
My Life Now is most often referred to as a great way for authors to get quality exposure and avid readers to discover their next read.
Without further delay, here's another stimulating episode of My Life Now.
Welcome back to another episode of My Life Now. Once again, my name is Dallas here. Today we have another amazing guest joining us all the way from England. Pleasure to have you here today, Simon. How are you?
Good. Thank you very much for having me.
Today we're going to be talking about your book, Star-Crossed. So I'm excited to hear more about that and your motivation behind the book, the history of the book as well. And so before we do that, before we get into that book, I just want to get to know you a little bit better. So tell our audience, who are you? Where are you in England? And some things like that.
Sure. Well, my name's Simon Worrell. I'm a journalist, features writer for magazines like National Geographic, The Smithsonian, The London Times, and others, and the author of three critically acclaimed nonfiction books, of which Star-Crossed is the last. And I'm talking to you now from a remote part of Great Britain on the Welsh border under the Black Mountains, perfect place for a writer to hide away and write.
Yeah. Wow. How long have you been there?
I go back and forward. I also have a house with my wife on Long Island, but we go back and forward. So I'm here 6 months of the year, roughly.
I got to ask, which one's better? I mean, which one's better for the writing environment?
They're just totally different. They're totally different. Long Island is fun because we go to the beach. It's 5 minutes from the house. We're in the so-called Swanktons, I call it.
All right.
Here, it's nothing but fields and sheep full of lambs at the moment.
Yeah. All right. Well, Simon, what led you to become an author? You said this is your third book. So what kind of led you to start writing the first one?
Well, I've been a journalist for about 30, 40 years now. Initially, I started my career in Germany when I was married to a German woman, and then transferred to the US and began to write for all different publications in the UK, and then with National Geographic, which was quite an apprenticeship, very famous magazine, obviously, and they took me on and they sent me all over the world, and I still work for them, though a bit less and mostly on the web site now. It's mostly there. What made me become an author? Well, I always loved literature and reading. I studied English literature at university in England. My mother was a formative influence. She was an amateur poet and a book lover. And she definitely influenced me, this chosen path. And I guess I never really had any doubt I would become a writer. It was a long and winding road. I initially went into the theater and tried to succeed there, which I didn't, and then got into journalism. And then the books, the first breakthrough book was called The Poet and the Murderer. You can find out all this on my website, simonworrellauthor.com. That was a story about a forger and double murderer, a true story, true crime. Second one was a book called The Very White of Love, which was a fictional version of my mother's story in World War II. She was married to a young man who died in France, and I traced that story through her letters and through going to all of the sites that he was connected with. And Star-Crossed is the third, and I'm currently writing a new book, which we can talk about maybe at the end.
Yeah, so you're not done is what it sounds like. You're going to keep writing.
Yeah.
That's great. Yeah. That's great. And so if you could just tell us a little bit about the theme of this third book, Star-Crossed, I just want to kind of lay that down for our audience, and then I'll kind of ask some more specific questions as we go through.
Sure. Well, it's a love story set in World War II in occupied Paris with a Holocaust theme. And it's about a young girl called Annette Zellman, a young Jewish girl who comes to Paris with her family from Nancy, where she grew up in the eastern France. And they live in the center of Paris. And she goes to the Beaux-Arts Art Academy, the leading art academy in France. And she comes from a big, boisterous, noisy, funny Jewish family who are endlessly entertaining. She's super talented, very pretty, very full of life, joie de vivre. She paints, she draws, she sends amazingly funny, great letters. And because the Beaux-Arts Academy is a stone's throw from Paris's most famous literary cafe, the Café de Flore, Anna rocks up there and joins a set of young writers who all get attracted to her and she to them. She makes her way through a couple of others before she falls on and falls in love with a young poet called Jean Jaucian, who was pretty well known because he was a leading player in the Dadaist movement in the 30s in Paris. And they fall in love. Now, the Romeo and Juliet reference in the title is that both families, she's Jewish, he's Catholic, are against it. Hers mostly not because he's not Jewish, that's part of it, but mostly because it's the war and her father says you're too young and these are uncertain times, not a good time to marry. His parents, the Jaucians, father is an anti-Semite of the first order and right-wing Catholic, and he is ardently against the relationship. But believing that love will conquer all, they continue. Her parents eventually flee Paris as the Jewish anti-Jewish crackdowns occur. They go to a town called Limoges in the center of France. She says, as they leave, "Look, I'll be with you in a week. I just have some things to tie up here." She has no intention of going. She moves into Jean's studio, which becomes their love nest, and they then publish their marriage bans because she's threatened as a Jew with the anti-Jewish Nazi measures, and it would be safer for her, obviously, to have his to, for her to become Madame Jaucian. So they publish their marriage bans, and within 24 hours, she's picked up by the Gestapo. And I'll leave it hanging there, not to spoil
We don't
thing.
want all of it. We want to buy the book and get it for ourselves. So thank you kind of for laying that down for us. And so, what kind of research went into this story? Because it sounds like you got a lot going on in
A
different moving
lot, a
parts.
lot, a lot. There's a huge bibliography you'll see in the back of the book and all the source notes. Just to explain how we came to write this, and I wrote it with my wife, Heather McAdam. I hope that you will make clear that her name too in the video or at the bottom of the for the credits. So Heather had a friend called Ron, who was American, married a French gal called Laurence, who and they used to rock up on Long Island for the summer. And every summer, for years, Laurence would say, "Oh, you know, you should write a book about my aunt, Annette Zellman. You know, she was persecuted by the Nazis and has this amazing love story with Jean Jaucian." And we'd say, "Uh-huh, yeah, well, it sounds like a family saga to me, but you know, not much we can do because there's no documents." Well, then eventually, about 5 years ago, she ran and said, "Ah, listen, I have my mother. She just inherited a box full of masses of diaries and drawings and photos of Anna." And we thought, that's a book. And I immediately went to Paris and I went and interviewed Annette's younger sister, who occurs in the book. She was about 8 when Annette was a teenager. She's called, oh God, it's just, I've just blanked. Anyway, she's a wonderful woman. She was 90 at the time. She let me into her apartment, as all French Parisian women, beautifully coiffed, beautiful clothes, sat down, dining room table was Michel, she's called Michel Cares. Dining room is covered with books, documents, letters, drawings, paintings. And I sat for 3 hours. I videoed her and interviewed her. And at the end of it, I knew, wow, this is some story.
Wow,
So,
and that just
in
made
terms,
sense to write it. Yeah. Did your wife get to go on that trip with you
yeah,
as
well,
well?
eventually we returned to Paris once we got the book contract with Kensington. It's published by Kensington Citadel. We went back and we stayed in for 3 months, and it was at COVID time actually, so it was all a bit edgy. We lived in Montmartre, where Michelle lives, not far from her, and every day we'd go to her apartment and interview her. And she was indefatigable, with the most extraordinary memory, But she wouldn't make things up. She'd say, if she didn't know, she'd say, I don't know, can't remember. And that was the basis of the story, was her recollections, which we taped and recorded. And that formed the spine of the research, if you like, added to which there was all of the letters and paintings. And then, of course, you've got all those are the primary sources, as they're called. And then, of course, you've got all the secondary sources, which meant reading literally hundreds of books about the war, the Jews, the Vichy government, which was the French collaborationist government, the Nazis in Paris, Paris under the occupation, the art, the Beaux-Arts Academy, art movements at the time, surrealism, Dadaism, etc.
Wow.
So a long, long list,
Yeah.
which then backed up the personal love story, which is the heart of the book.
Does God really matter in our modern world? In today's culture, we can look deep into ourselves to find our own truth about anything that concerns us. In Urshuan Tibu's newly released book, A Voice from the Pews, he confronts and dives deep into questions lurking in the pews of humanity. The various topics covered in this book are a collage of thoughts on issues of faith, God, Jesus Christ, and perspectives on life itself. Find your copy of A Voice from the Pews on Amazon today. Surgery to remove a brain tumor resulted in a change to Robin's facial features, causing her to take a deep look into the mirror of God's Word to find answers to questions many of us have asked. Why did God create me as He did when He is certainly capable of creating so much more beauty? If beauty brings glory and honor to God, how can I possibly do so in my current physical condition? These are just some of the questions that Robin Parton seeks to answer in her 6-week Bible study titled, The Mirror of God's Word. Find your copy on Amazon today.
And so since around COVID time, you've been working on this book, is kind of what it sounds like. Many years.
Well, that was when we did the research, and then it was 2 years writing. It was published, what, last year, I think.
Wow. Wow. What is your goal, you and your wife, Heather? What are your goals for releasing this book to the public?
Well, it's a beautiful story. It's a beautiful, tender love story. So we want to move people, inspire people, touch their hearts. My wife is a recognized Holocaust biographer. She's done 3 Holocaust books. So for her speciality is 1942, the sort of lost girls of the Holocaust. And Annette filled that category. And so my wife did all the back end of the book without giving too much away about what happens. So I did, we sort of split it. I mossly did all the Jean Jaussian. And I love historical research, so I did a lot of that. Heather did mostly Annette's voice, Annette's documents, paintings, bringing those to life, etc. So that's how
Wow.
the work was split.
And how did this story change
So
your life?
for me,
Yeah.
it's just a beautiful story. What we want the world to know about. It's an important story. For my wife, it's part of her project of rescuing the forgotten girls of the Holocaust.
Yeah. And I love that you guys could do this together. I know it's so cool when a husband and wife can find their
Right,
passion
it was
together
great.
and work together. That's so
We're
cool.
still, and we didn't get divorced.
Yeah, that's the
Yeah,
key, right there,
that's
man.
the key. And
Yeah.
I should add that I'm fluent in French. And Heather jokes that that's why she brought me on board. But so I did all the heavy lifting with all of the French translation, and I'm also fluent in German. And
Wow.
so one of the key characters is an evil Nazi called Daneke, Theodor Daneke, and there's only a biography in German, so I had to plow through that to get all the relevant stuff we
Wow.
needed.
Wow. And I asked you a few minutes ago, how did this story change your life? And so you kind of touched on that, but what was the most inspirational part for you?
The most inspirational part was getting to know Annette and this wonderfully gifted, talented young woman who was full of life, full of elan, full of joie de vivre. And she was just a really, really inspiring person to be around for a couple of years. We absolutely both adored her. And we actually, even yesterday, we said, God, I miss Annette, when my wife brought something up. So she was the great inspiration and the great pleasure in writing the book was to be with Annette.
Yeah. And you said you had hours of interviewing her, interviewing,
No,
not
not
her.
Annette. No, she died.
What was her name? No, sorry. What was the other lady's name?
That was Michelle Kerrs, and
Michelle. Are those
she was the
original
younger.
tapes available for the public, or
She was
it's
the younger sister of Annette.
right.
So, well, I suppose they could be, but
Because
not
that's
really.
like a bonus feature of the story. That's
Yeah, could be, but not really. I
interesting.
haven't done that yet, but perhaps I should think about it.
Yeah. Wonderful.
I mean, maybe you could post one if I sent one.
Yeah, I'm sure people once people read the story, like you said, it's the spine of the research, and so that's I'm sure people would be interested in that.
Yeah.
And what can we take away for this in 2024 of that story that was so long ago but can still inspire us? How can we apply that to
Well,
our
of
life?
course, there's strife involving Jews at the moment with Israel and Palestine. So, in a
Yeah.
way, it's a sort of contemporary story, but about persecution of Jews in our case. So, I think it's a sort of eternal story of courage and love in the face of the worst kind of brutal circumstances. And these two young people, I think anybody that's young that reads it will feel uplifted and inspired by how they refuse to give in, if you like, to the contemporary moral framework and the Nazis.
Yeah. You were talking about your fourth book coming soon. Let's talk about that a little bit more.
Yeah, it's exciting. I'm sort of getting towards the end of it. It's called The Lost Rembrandt, a true story of espionage, love, of art, espionage, and love in World War II. And it's the story of a lost Rembrandt painting that bobbed up for auction at a small auction house in upstate New York. And it was bought by an art dealer connoisseur called Cliff Shorer, who has subsequently become my co-author. We're writing it together. And he bought it and did all the due diligence and got it accepted by the Rembrandt Project as a genuine Rembrandt. And it really traces a sort of 500-year story of this painting from the moment it was left Rembrandt's hands in Leiden in 1623 in Holland. It was an early work of his. It's a picture of a, it's on a panel. It's only about the size of a paperback book. And it's a picture of a sort of slightly ugly tramp-like figure with a big drunkard's nose. And actually, Rembrandt was drawn to those street types. And beggars, which he painted quite a lot of. They're called tronies in Dutch, meaning face portraits. And so, I don't know if you know, there's a fictional film called The Red Violin. It's the story of this violin, which is crafted by a master and travels across time, going from hand to hand. So this is a bit like a true non-fiction version of that. It traces the story of this book. And specifically, it has an amazing backstory that leads to Nazi Germany and Berlin because the painter's eventual owner in the 20th century was Anna Block, daughter of a painter called Joseph Block. And she had it for a long time, and then she got it out as the Nazis were closing in. She was sensible enough to get it moved out and smuggled out to America, which is how it ended up at that auction eventually. And Anna Block is an amazing character, Jewish, brilliant, a bit like Annette, from a very well-known, she was related to the Oppenheimer banking family. They were all cousins. They went to a huge castle in the summer. And Anna then, through the war, she became a resistance fighter in southern France. She was persecuted in Berlin, had to move to Paris, and then that became untenable. Several periods of her life, she literally vanished off the radar and sort of lived underground, going from secret house to secret house. So she was an amazing woman.
Wow.
And she's the main character, Anna Block, as
And so
is
when
Rembrandt.
can we, you said it's almost done. When could we be seeing that available?
I don't think it'd be done till August 25, I think, is pub date.
Okay. All right. We'll be watching for that. One more time. What is the title of today's book that we're talking about? and then your website where we can find it.
It's called Star-Crossed, which of course is Romeo and Juliet were called Star-Crossed Lovers. It's called Star-Crossed, A True Romeo and Juliet Story in Hitler's Paris. And it's available on Amazon, other booksellers, in stores, and also you can find out much more about it at my website, simonworrellauthor.com, and my wife's website, which is 999, The Forgotten Girls.
Wow. 999, theforgottengirls.com.
Yeah.
Wow. All right. We'll add both of those into the description today for today's podcast. Thank you again, Simon, for joining us all the way from England. It's a pleasure to have you here today.
My pleasure. My pleasure.
Yeah. And yeah, I want to remind
I hope everybody enjoys the book. If you've got any feedback, you can contact me through my website. Please, if you do read it and you love it, which we hope you will, put a 5-star review on Amazon. Yes. That's very important.
Those reviews mean a lot to the authors. So please remember to do that. Thank you, Simon. We hope to have you back for your fourth book.
I hope next year, make a date.
Thank you for listening and supporting another episode of My Life Now.
Please remember to subscribe to our podcast show and share it with a friend.
Together, we can keep the message of these books alive.
Until we turn the next page together, stay classy.